Good afternoon, everybody. This is the afternoon session of the Portland City Council on September 7th. And for those of you listening in the Pettigrove and Lovejoy room, if for any reason the audio or the video does not work, please send somebody immediately to the council chamber and we'll resolve that expeditiously. But we won't go on without you. I promise that. Could you please call the roll, Carla?
Udaly?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Wheeler?
Here. There is a statement of decorum we read at the beginning of each council session. I'd like to abridge it today if I could. Lots of people are going to testify. They may or may not have the same opinion as you do, but everybody has a right to be heard, to feel safe, and to feel respected in this chamber. So when people are testifying or when the council is deliberating, we ask that people not interrupt. If you do interrupt, that is a violation of council rules. You'll be asked not to do so. If you continue to be interrupting, you'll be asked to leave. And if you're asked to leave and you do not leave, you're subject to arrest for trespass. Obviously, we hope that doesn't happen and everybody feels respected and heard. If you are a lobbyist, you must state so as part of council rules. If you're here representing an organization, that is also helpful. If you'd like to sign up to testify, there are sign-up sheets either in the chamber with the council clerk. There are also sign-up sheets outside the council chamber. You'll have plenty of time to do that. When you testify, could you please state your name for the record? We don't need your full address. When your time is 30 seconds from being up, you'll see a yellow light come on and it beeps. When your time is up, the red light goes on and you'll hear more beeps. And we ask people to please be to the point as much as possible. Given the very large number of people signed up to testify, I want to be very clear, we may not get to everybody today who would like to testify today, but there will be other opportunities. So my game plan is it's a couple of minutes after 2. We're going to hear some brief staff presentation. We're going to offer up some amendments. I'm going to read a statement from Commissioner Saltzman. We'll then go right to public testimony. Think 2 minutes per person. We ask you not to be repetitive. There are a lot of people here who probably want to speak on the same thing. It's okay just to say, I also support X or I agree with X. If you want, you can give a thumbs up if you support something. If you don't, you can give a thumbs down. But again, please don't shout out. So with that, I would ask, first of all, for Carla to read the first ordinance and the first two resolutions, please.
Okay. Item 997, adopt the Central City 2035 plan, amend the comprehensive plan map, transportation system plan, Willamette Greenway plan, Willamette River Greenway inventory, scenic resources protection plan, zoning map, and Title 33, and replace prior Central City plans and documents. 998, adopt the Central City 2035 plan action charts, performance targets, and urban design diagrams. And 999, adopt the Central City 2035 plan green loop concept report.
Colleagues, we're here today to talk about the future of Portland's Central City. The Planning and Sustainability Commission has forwarded a recommended draft plan. This plan is the first comprehensive update to the Central City Plan since 1988, the first update to the new 2035 Comprehensive Plan, and our chance to lay the groundwork for a Central City that is even a more vibrant place than it is today. This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to influence the look, feel, and function of the place where today 39,000 people live and 123,000 people work on a mere 3% of the city's total land. The future of the Central City is obviously very important. For our economy, more than 50,000 new jobs are coming in the next 2 decades. For for our ability to address the housing shortage that's driving up housing costs. 26,000 households live here now. By 2035, this number is expected to more than double. For our supply of affordable housing, it has the highest concentration of affordable housing in the region, and 60% of the city's affordable housing units are located in the central city. This will grow with inclusionary housing and with projects like the redevelopment of the post office site. The 1972 downtown plan sparked the resurgence of downtown as the economic and cultural center of the city. It spurred public and private investment, the Transit Mall, and the Tom McCall Waterfront Park. The 1988 Central City Plan brought the Lloyd District and the Central East Side into the Central City. Its premise was that the success of the Central City as a jobs hub depended upon more residential growth as well. So far, that formula has worked well. The 1988 plan also called for integrating the Willamette River more into the life of our city. We've made progress in this area, but as you've heard me say on many occasions, I believe we can do much more. Today we start the hearing process for the Central City 2035 plan. The City Council has already endorsed many of its policies and proposals through its past work. City Council has given direction on the Central City Concept Plan, policy plans for North, Northeast, West, and Southeast quadrants, and other work on the Willamette River, scenic and natural resources, in the inclusionary housing bonus. Over 8,000 Portlanders so far have participated in this process. Now, I'd like to turn it over to Sally Edmonds, who will walk us through the agenda of today's hearing. Sally, good afternoon and welcome.
Thank you very much. Sally Edmonds with Planning and Sustainability. Good afternoon. We are very pleased to be here today for the first hearings on the Central City Plan. As you know, the Central City Plan contains many volumes, and here is the long list of those volumes. The record for this plan is over behind the city attorney. There are about 22 boxes, and that record is in the room.
Half price right now.
So I thought what I'd do is start out is just to go over the overall schedule with you.
Thank you.
We're here today for two public hearings, one on the main components of the plan, one on the post office early implementation. I'll go through that a little bit later. And then on September 14th, we have two more hearings, one on the new Chinatown-Japantown historic guidelines and one on the scenic and environmental overlay zones outside of the central city that relate to this. Then we have four council sessions scheduled: September 28th, October 18th, November 2nd, and December 6th. And those are to work through any amendments you might have on the Central City Plan that you'll be hearing about through these hearings today and next week.
And Sally, for those who don't get the opportunity to testify today, assuming we run out of time, when will they be able to testify next?
They will testify on September 14th.
Very good. We will just roll
these over.
Okay. And they can, of course, come to one of the later sessions as well. Is that correct?
They can certainly come to the later sessions.
Okay, but our expectation we'll get through it on September 14th, if not today.
That's right. That's right. We have another hearing scheduled for January 18th, 2018, and our intention for that hearing is to have that be on any amendments that Council would wish to bring forward. So you can discuss them at the four sessions in the fall. We will package them all up, and so you can have a hearing on all of those on January 18th. We will then, we may need to schedule another session to work through any other comments on those, but we would go for a council vote likely sometime in March. We can't go before March because The vote needs to follow the effective date of the comprehensive plan. That plan is still in the hands of the state, and we expect them to issue a decision and the plan to be effective, the comprehensive plan to be effective by March. So we would follow the effective date with a vote on the Central City Plan, because this is the first update to the comprehensive plan. Okay. So then, so today, as Carla read, we have a hearing on the bulk of the plan, the main ordinance that she listed, and then a couple of resolutions. And these items will be adopted as amendments to the new comprehensive plan once that is in effect. And again, that would be in March. And we are currently expecting council discussion of any potential amendments on the things we hear today at 2 o'clock at 2 p.m. on October 18th. It's currently scheduled. So then on at 4:30 today, we'll hear testimony on early implementation of some things for the post office. And that ordinance would be adopted as amendment to the existing comprehensive plan. And so council discussion of amendments or a second reading and vote on that would take place on September 28th, starting at 3 p.m. And that ordinance could then go into effect 30 days later.
Very good. And so, if there are people who are not taking copious notes and want to review what you have just said in terms of dates, times, and place, where do they go to get that information?
So one of the things that we could do is we could post this PowerPoint online. And they can certainly, we'll put out an e-news with more information on
this. Perfect. Thank you.
So just moving on to then September 14th, we have two more hearings. And again, at the top of the slide, it says that if testimony from September 7th hearings is not complete, it will be heard first on 9/14. So the third hearing, sorry, go back. So the third hearing will be on the new Chinatown-Japantown Historic Design Guidelines. That ordinance will also be adopted as an amendment to the existing comprehensive plan, and that will come back to you on September 28th also for any potential amendments or second reading. And then that would be in effect 30 days later because it's the existing comprehensive plan. Finally, the fourth hearing on September 14th is on some amendments to the environmental and scenic overlay zones outside of the central city. And that would be adopted as an amendment to the new comprehensive plan. So again, it goes with the larger package in March. So so that's kind of the rundown of the next couple of days of hearings. So So, Mayor, back to today. The next step, I think that's the end of the slides on that. Thank you, Nicholas. The next step would be the amendments, your amendments and any other amendments that council members may want to introduce. We have invited testimony here from four individuals from the Planning and Sustainability Commission, the Design Commission, the Landmarks Commission, and the Forestry Commission. And then if there's other testimony from elected officials or others, and then moving on to the general testimony.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions? Very good. Thank you, Sally.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Before we open the hearing, there's some amendments that I propose we put on the table now so the public can address them in testimony if they so desire. The amendments I'm introducing are minor text cleanups and clarifying language in the code. These include things such as how to measure the top of bank and simplification of the shadow study requirements. They were provided to City Council and made available to the public last week. There's two amendments in these packages that I would like to highlight. First, I'd like to offer up for discussion purposes the proposed view corridor of Mount Hood from Salmon Springs Fountain in Waterfront Park. Here's a couple of reasons why I think we should put this on the table. Salmon Springs and Governor Tom McCall Waterfront Park is a special place. It draws thousands of visitors every year. Today, there is a view from Salmon Springs of Mount Hood, and it seems to be something of a signature view in our city. But there's also an important trade-off with preserving the view corridor. Protecting this view reduces height in a corridor that crosses directly through the Central East Side. There are impacts to the development potential of the properties that we should be considering. However, of the five potential views that exist from Waterfront Park, this probably has one of the least impacts. I know that this was a particularly difficult decision for the folks on the Planning and Sustainability Commission. I'm inclined to accept the recommendation of the Planning and Sustainability Commission, but I still want to hear from property owners, the public, and my colleagues on this important matter before we as a council make a final decision. I've also included an amendment that extends the view corridor for the Japanese Garden in Washington Park. As we saw at a work session a couple of weeks ago, the view from the Japanese Park Pavilion to Mount Hood is iconic and it is important, but the trees on the hillside are also growing and they're starting to block the view. Trimming the trees and potentially selectively removing a few may be necessary to preserve that view. I'd like to hear the public's thoughts on that. Commissioner Fritz, I understand you also have...
Mayor?
Commissioner Fish.
So I'll second what we'll call Wheeler 1, which is a package of amendments.
Very good. There's more to Wheeler 1, and that is Commissioner Fritz's addition to this particular package. Commissioner Fritz?
Well, this is on a different topic.
That's fine. So we have a motion then. Can I get a second for
second.
The package? We'll call that the package amendment. It's dated August 29th as part of the Central City 2035 so that the public can testify. We now have that on the record. People are able to testify when it comes up. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler. I'll have some more amendments next week. There's still a few things that Portland Parks and Recreation are working out with the Portland Planning Bureau and Sustainability. But the one that is my particular concern is to maintain the base height of 75 feet and remove the proposed bonus height increase of up to 250 feet for parcels at the Morrison Bridgehead on the west side of the Willamette River. This was a decision made by the council last year, which I'd like the new council to look into. My main concern is the step down to the river, that allowing 250 feet right up where everything around it is only 75 feet, and the house, I mean, not the house, the building behind is relatively new and is less than 250 feet, is not maintaining the step down to the river, which is required in the comprehensive plan. It would also, to keep the same as the rest of that strip, would be better urban form. And it would be more supportive, I believe, of the policy CE2, which calls for improving access to and from the Central East Side Industrial District. One of the main reasons that the rest of the council wanted to upzone those parcels was for redevelopment, and that could include changing the on and off ramps for the Morrison Bridge, which is not necessarily something that we want to incentive, in my opinion.
We have a motion. I'll second it for discussion purposes.
Thank you.
Any others, colleagues?
I have a couple.
Commissioner Udaly.
Yeah. First of all, I would like to propose an amendment to our green roof amendment, raising the required area to be covered from 60% to 100%. We've consulted with BPS and Portland's Green Roof Information Think Tank. There's some persuasive arguments for increasing that number, and I'm very interested to hear from the community on that.
I'll second that.
Thank you. And
that's
then
you, Daily One.
Second one, I'm proposing a zoning code amendment for the properties upland of the dock on the north end of the central city. The subject properties are upland of the best unused dock on the Willamette River in the central city, and in order to use the dock to activate the river, we would need to rezone that area to allow commercial activity.
Mayor, I'll second that.
Seconded by Commissioner Fish. Commissioner Fritz,
I was just wondering, I'm not clear on where the location is and what's the current zoning or the proposed zoning.
So current zoning is residential. It's... almost the entire river is Sorry, it's right here. I guess, Carla, I'll need to enter this into the record. So it's near Terminal 1, and it's my understanding that there's no actual lots still available for development, so we're not trying to change the residential area to a commercial area. We're trying to provide commercial access to that dock, which cannot be achieved without changing the zoning.
Thank you for the clarification.
Your microphone, is it on?
It's not on. I'm not close enough. Do you have a description? Is there a tax ID number for the property or some on the documents you have? Otherwise, we can...
I have a map, but I do not have the tax ID number.
Or an address, no.
Okay. It is north of the Fremont Bridge. It's east of Sherlock Street.
Okay.
Jamie will track it down for you.
Very good. And that was already seconded. Any further amendments, colleagues? At this point, I'd like to read a statement from Commissioner Saltzman. He is our transportation commissioner. He could not be here today, and so he asked me if I would read the following. A quick announcement. Unfortunately, Commissioner Saltzman is out ill today and is Portland's current transportation commissioner. He asked me to make some brief comments this afternoon. As we know, many of you are here due to transportation items in our draft central city plan and specifically the Oregon Department of Transportation's I-5 Rose Corridor project. Many of you have already seen Commissioner Saltzman's listed expectations regarding the project, and he's provided copies of those here, and they're also up on his website. I, too, have seen them and wholeheartedly support them as Portland's mayor. We must implement the one and only proven method for combating traffic congestion, value pricing, sooner rather than later. We must build the complete project as outlined in the North-Northeast Quadrant Plan. We must ensure that funding for this project does not decrease resources for other important citywide objectives, and we must respect the long history of this area and work to counter continued gentrification of the neighborhoods around this area. Thanks again for all of you who plan to testify regarding this project's inclusion in the Central City Plan, but also do know that Commissioner Saltzman plans to bring a resolution to Council specific to this project and the expectations both of us have expressed regarding it. We would encourage you to make your voices heard at the time as well, and in the coming weeks, Commissioner Saltzman's office will announce when that resolution will be scheduled for a Council hearing. And there is a letter in very fine print here, and I believe copies are available of this letter here or somewhere close by here. They're certainly available on Commissioner Saltzman's web page. Now, I'd like, as Sally had indicated before, to invite some of our citizen commissioners to come up to the table. Andre Baugh from the Planning and Sustainability Commission, Julie Livingston, who is a design commissioner, Kristen Miner, who is a landmarks commissioner, and Tui Tu, who is a forestry commissioner. Come on up. Greetings. And I don't know if we have our other two commissioners in the building. They may be in another room, but if they show up, great.
May I?
Yeah, please. Good afternoon.
Thanks. Good afternoon.
For being here.
Nice to see you. Thank you for this opportunity. I am Tui Tu. I'm the member of the Urban Forestry Commission. On behalf of Mayor Richick, the policy committee chair who could not be here today due to Irma, I'll be presenting comments and thoughts from the combined efforts of the policy committee. As a caveat, content material from this letter has not yet been voted on by the full commission. This letter will be presented in the September 21st Urban Forestry Commission meeting, in which the full commission will vote and a written testimony will be submitted at that time. Please accept the following testimony. The Central City 2035 plan is an impressive document with aspirational goals, innovative designs, and strategic thinking. We look forward to continuing to work with the staff and others to adapt and implement all relative policies that pertain to trees in future developments, parks, plazas, and other spaces identified in the Central City Plan, as well as those related to the neighborhood master plans. Two important factors I'd like to point out as we move forward with the Central City Plan. Number one, human health, human well-being, and number two, environmental health, which will require intentional planning to ensure that new urban development benefit people and nature. We encourage intentional and innovative street design to accommodate trees. Please consider the following eight comments as you prepare to advance the next version of the plan. Number one, the plan notes that there will likely be code revisions, policy changes, and new investments in tree planting, preservations, and maintenance that will affect the two different tree target scenarios, which is highlighted in the technical memo. We request that the urban forestry be informed in a timely manner regarding these targets, implementation practices, and methodology used to track and evaluate progress. Number two, given the priority and extent to which the new comprehensive plan calls for green infrastructure and trees for human and public health reasons, City Council should act immediately to remove all Title 11 exemptions from commercial industrial lands. Number three, trees are often the last element of consideration during the design and development process. The city has an opportunity to change this pattern by ensuring that green infrastructure is brought into the intentional hierarchy process under the flexible street design. Number four, the goal for requiring adequate subsurface soil volumes for trees in conjunction with development and infrastructure projects is very important. However, it is not obvious how this requirement will be implemented. The plan offers guidance, but the policy needs strengthening along with code provisions to implement it. Number five, the plan distinguishes between different street character sites and requires landscaping if building setbacks are selected by applicants. However, the building setbacks will allow in some instances but appear to be generally discouraged. The plan should strongly encourage in more instances require landscaped building setbacks along sections of the Green Loop and flexible streets. I'm almost done. Number six, we support the new Central City Master Plan requirements as it will offer good opportunities to enhance canopy and associated livability benefits on larger city sites. Pertaining to this section, we recommend the following. A, adding an approval criterion that focuses on inclusion of open air, open area, and incorporation of green infrastructure, specifically trees. This is needed to meet the big goals defined in the comprehensive plan and provide a base for related tree requirements in this section. 6B, increase the tree density requirements for medium and large trees from one tree per 3,000 square foot to one tree per 2,000 square foot. This is more appropriate for the tree size and area ratio, especially given the limited amount of open air required in these sites. Number seven, existing and new parks, plazas, and other open spaces present excellent opportunities to plant a diversity of species and grow the next generation of heritage trees. The city should take full advantage of spaces below and above ground and implement innovative designs that offer sufficient space for large trees. Number eight, we strongly support the expansion of the greenway setback on the Willamette River from 25 feet to 50 feet in the recommended draft City Central. This expansion is critical to improving the ecological function of the greenway while working towards multiple tree goals for the city, increasing overall tree canopy, planting more large form native trees, improving air quality, and reducing urban heat island effect in the central city. The city plan set forth a vision that will impact future generations. Tree planted today will take generations for human health efforts to be realized. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. We appreciate your being here.
Thank you.
Okay. Commissioners, my name is Kristen Miner. I'm the Vice Chair of the Landmarks Commission. Thank you so much for allowing us to have invited testimony.
Thanks for being here.
The Landmarks Commission has several issues or concerns with Central City 510 chapter recommended draft. I'm going to jump into those just as a matter of time, although we really appreciate all the work that has gone into this and support much of it. The first thing I'd like to talk about for a moment is historic districts. That's where our work differs quite a bit from that of the Design Commission. When we review new buildings in historic districts, we have to take into account the cohesiveness of the entire district. And a district really is a single historic resource. Because of that, we are seeking several amendments that would help us reduce conflicts. And when an applicant comes to us, for instance, with FAR or bulk that can be transferred into a historic district, that may not create a compatible form. So one of the amendments that we are asking for is that 510-200-D1 strikes the clause transferred to a site except that FAR transfers into historic districts is not permitted. The other issue regarding heights in historic districts, heights is a very complicated issue. We certainly recognize that. And height in a historic district really creates what in architecture school I learned as a palimpsest. In other words, one of those wonderful places in a great city where you can recognize the disparities in scale between new and old, that there are traces of something that used to be, and then next to it, perhaps, say, along the edge of the historic district, is where wonderful new buildings highlight those differences and make us aware.
Can I just take a moment to acknowledge that's the first time in my 9 years that anyone has used that word at council? I don't want to... You went to architecture school, so you had a slightly different definition. I remember it as the title of Gore Vidal's memoir. Different school, different time,
very
but
nice.
Okay.
Anyway, very nice.
Thank you for using an interesting word.
You're so welcome. In recognition of the difficulty of where we've arrived, I think the Landmarks Commission is prepared to accept the heights in the maps as proposed, with the recognition that they are not always compatible. However, in order to reduce the conflicts of applicants coming in front of us, we ask for some simple notes to the height and FAR maps. That those maximum heights and FARs are subject to land use approval. We also, I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but we definitely support the way that ground floor window standards work currently with modification standards, generally offering applicants good solutions. And we generally find that those work for applicants. And so I know that there are some amendments that the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability have offered. You'll be hearing about those, and we got a chance to read them just prior to coming in here. But generally, we support those. We do propose striking the clause relating to allowing 5 feet of landscaping at parking structures, however.
Why is that?
Because allowing landscaping in place of a more urban solution seems like a step backwards. It's a very suburban kind of solution in general. So I would like to just leave you with the words from our own comprehensive plan policy 4.49, resolution of conflicts in historic districts. And it reads in part, refine base zoning in historic districts to take into account the character of the historic resources in the district. So we ask for your help in achieving that. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So, good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners Udaly.
Fritz, and Fish. My name is Julie Livingston. I'm the chair of the Portland Design Commission. And you should have in front of you a letter from the Design Commission on Design Commission letterhead. The commission is asking for 6 amendments to the current draft of Central City 2035. The staff at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability have been incredibly receptive to feedback that we've provided throughout the process. These are issues that the Design Commission thinks remain outstanding. 3 of these are related to ground floor window standards. My understanding is that staff has been doing some work to revise language around ground floor window standards, and so they may not all be applicable still. So with that in mind, our first and kind of most important issue is minimum floor area ratios within the central city. Thankfully, there are minimum floor area ratios now proposed in the central city. They vary on a scale of 1-to-1 and 3-to-1. This is new with Central City 2035, and it's definitely a step in the right direction. The commission, though, feels that these fairly low minimum FARs don't go quite far enough. We would like to see the minimum FARs represent a more significant percentage of the maximum FAR on any site. We believe that this better achieves the goals of density that Central City 2035 would want to achieve. And we also believe that this revision would be compatible with several of our most important Central City fundamental design guidelines. A2, emphasize Portland themes. A5, enhance, embellish, and identify areas. C3, respect architectural integrity. And C4, complement the context of existing buildings. So that is our first request, that minimum FARs be increased.
Do you have a specific number?
You know, we've had much discussion in the hearings room whether it should be half of the maximum FAR up to 75 or 80% of the maximum FAR. That might be high. We do think that it should be something that's higher than what is typically allowed in the mixed-use zones. Okay. The 1-to-1, 3-to-1 is common in the mixed-use zones. So second issue aligns with Kristen's testimony on limits on increased floor area and the no limit applied to FAR that can be transferred to a site. So the Design Commission does not review buildings in historic districts, but the same guidelines apply to those buildings that apply to the buildings that we review, and we do have a strong opinion on this. Maximum heights have been reduced in 2 historic districts, but it is our belief that those maximum heights are not consistent with the types of historic construction in those districts. The type of construction kind of limits the height, the bulk, the scale of buildings. And having heights that are significantly taller than the existing fabric will really significantly impact the character of those neighborhoods. So we would request that the unlimited transfers into historic districts be eliminated or reduced to a scale that the Landmarks Commission finds to be compatible with the character of each district. We also have made note that required ground floor retail sales and service uses in the South Waterfront Subdistrict have been eliminated. This section of the code required ground floor commercial activity at 3 waterfront locations and 6 intersections in South Waterfront. We understand that ground floor commercial activity is currently a little bit of a hard sell in some locations in South Waterfront, but that's the South Waterfront of 2017. And South Waterfront of 2035 is likely to be a much more vibrant place with that type of retail activity at those intersections, which have not yet been built out, and at some specific locations at the waterfront. With respect to ground floor windows, I will touch on bike parking. I think that bike parking is something that we talk about all the time in the hearings room. It's important to the city. It's important to the Design Commission. It's important to every single person that rides a bike. We want there to be plenty of bike parking. We want it to be easily accessible. What we don't want is for it to cause dead space on our streets. And when bike parking uses that are adjacent to the exterior wall of a building are limited to storage space, it's not very active space, and we want to have active streets. So bike use areas that support shop space for people to do bicycle repairs, that support bike wash stations. The commission has seen these regularly recently in both commercial construction, commercial buildings and multifamily buildings. And so we are fully in support of active bike use spaces at our ground floors, and would hope to see a revision to that code language so that we don't end up with potentially quite a bit of just plain bike storage space at our streets. And finally, the ground floor window standards that are applicable to street-facing facades closer than 20 feet to a street lot line, and also walls of parking structures that are exempted from ground floor window standards if the facade is set back at least 5 feet and landscaped to the L2 standard. We believe that these revisions represent a rollback, a pretty significant rollback to ground floor window standards in the central city. They are contrary to central city fundamental design guidelines, and we would like to see all buildings be subjected to ground floor window standards so that we can have conversations about what's appropriate or inappropriate in the hearings room. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Joy.
Good afternoon. Andre Baugh, Vice Chair, Planning Sustainability Commission. I'm here to summarize Catherine Schultz's letter from the PSC to you earlier. The Planning Commission is pleased to forward the draft Central City 2035 plan for your consideration. As you know, this is the first update since 1998 and our chance to lay the groundwork for the Central City for the next 20 years. It will also be the first amendment to the newly adopted comprehensive plan. This plan represents years of work and public input, starting with the concept plan, quadrant plans, and a variety of studies. The PSC has received more than 750 comments prior to and at public hearings. We considered amendments based on testimony, worked through several challenging issues before voting and recommending this package to you. I'm going to highlight some of the issues that we found in this plan. The plan includes a fully revised bonus and transfer system to support affordable housing, height and FAR increases in transit-rich districts, height decreases to protect iconic scenic views and integrity of our historic districts. Mary, you had brought that up. Regulations to allow more next-generation industrial businesses, ground floor use improvements to support active and livable streets, a new environmental zone to help protect natural resources along the river, new green building requirements, and new transportation projects to make it easier to walk, bike, and use transit in the central city. The highlights I just mentioned align with the Portland plan, the comprehensive plan, and the climate action plan goals and policies. So this is really bringing all those to bear and implementing them. I'm going to take a couple of minutes here now to highlight a few of the issues the PSC found challenging, and I'm sure you'll find challenging too. The first was protecting scenic views. As the mayor mentioned, he wants to look at that iconic view from Salmon Springs. That was a topic that we struggled with also. We received testimony that protecting the views of Mount Hood are important because of the iconic nature and kind of the postcard of Portland. We also received testimony that against protecting the view because of the negative impact on development in Central City. And Central City is one of the hottest growing neighborhoods that we have for jobs. During the recession, it grew. So there was, that tension there. We voted 7-4 not to support protecting the view of Mount Hood from Salmon Springs, but we looked at other views, and like limiting heights from the view from the Tillicum Crossing and other public views to protect that Mount Hood view. So there was some balancing there of protected views. The PSC also voted to limit heights in historic districts. Height limits in some historic districts predate the creation of the districts and do not align the character of older structures in these districts. Again, we deliberated on how best to balance historic preservation objectives with existing development allowances. Ultimately, we decided to bring regulation into greater alignment with the objectives of the historic district designation and design protections applied to the Historic Landmarks Commission. and you've heard about that already. Another significant item is the I-5 Broadway Wilder Transportation System Plan, TSP project. This project includes adding an auxiliary lane on I-5 to improve safety and reduce congestion. It also would make changes to overpasses to support active transportation and a future pedestrian and bicycle bridge. We discussed this in depth and voted 6-4 to retain the project because of its important freeway safety, local street, and active transportation benefits. But I want to make clear, it was not an open check. It was clarified and really quantified to say it's contingent on the inclusion of the bike and pedestrian connections, the development of an equity strategy to address the impacts to the African-American community, inclusion of low-income housing solutions, and encouragement of ODOT-PBOT to evaluate congestion pricing and transportation demand management options, among other things. This project has the opportunity to bring and connect the historic African-American community that was destroyed 60-plus years ago back. It also has an opportunity to, it's a downtown project, but it has an opportunity to help East Portland if you equitably invest in East Portland like you would downtown. I believe, and these are my personal feelings, but I think six of the people believe, because of these items, that we can do both. Equity is not about a trade-off. It's about doing both. And we can bring and do things for the African-American community that was destroyed by a freeway a long time ago. We can bring prosperity, housing, a lot of other things in an equitable way. And we can invest in East Portland in a very equitable way that makes them feel as part of Portland as they would downtown in this shiny penny investment. Finally, the PSC supported some green building measures that are in the plan. We recognize the significant public and benefits that these measures provide and how they will align with the comp plan and the climate action plan goals and policies. But we're also sensitive to the increased costs, including them in new construction. However, we asked for and we got results of a feasibility analysis showed that the costs were nominal. So, yes, there are costs, but they're not significant from our, so we went ahead and approved them. The PSC deliberations were informed and thoughtful, and one of the underlying things that I think when you read the comp plan and look at many of the items in the comp plan, the Central City Plan, is this idea that because it's downtown, you need to do something comparable in many instances in East Portland. So you're going to build a green loop. There's language that talks about what's the comparable in East Portland. You're going to do I-5 Broadway. What's the comparable investment in East Portland? So it's not, this plan is focused on downtown, its prosperity, its growth. But I believe we are transmitting to you the idea that when you do this, don't forget East Portland. Make the investments, make the equitable investments in East Portland, and keep equity, which is part of the Portland plan this council approved, the comp plan, its policies, and these policies of the Central City 2035 in mind when you do this. Because if you don't, it will be a downtown plan, and it should be a Portland plan for all the residents, and so keep that in mind. I want to thank the staff and their hard work. We asked a lot of staff to respond in addressing questions, concerns, and the citizens that were raised by citizens to get to answers to make our decisions. They did a wonderful job. I think they just did great. I want to thank Catherine Schultz for being the chair, leading this through. We've come a long way since 1988. It charts a new course for a prosperous, healthy, equitable, and resilient urban core in the years to come, and I think a greater Portland, too. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you all for your testimony. We appreciate it. Thanks for your service on our commissions.
Thank you.
Do we have any other elected officials or commissioners who'd like to come up first to testify? Very good. So here's what we're going to do.
This is the commissioner right there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Come on up, please.
We have two.
Come on up. Oh, it went.
Caption.
The captions are not working, so we'll wait until they are.
And if there are, if there's folks with small children or people with disabilities who'd also like to go first, we'll certainly accommodate you. Please just let Carla know. So just as a reminder, there will be about 2 minutes to testify. And we'll take as many people as we can between now and 4:30, and I'll repeat this in a minute. And if you'd prefer not to come back, if you're not called today, we'll obviously take written testimony, and that testimony will be available until 5 p.m. on September 15th. Still no? So how are the ducks looking this year?
Was the game canceled this week? It's still going forth?
It's possible. I'll check.
So this is a cell phone-based system. Is that the deal?
I don't know if it's getting old.
Yeah, it is. You should start looking for an alternative.
Well, it's required. It's a legally required function. What if all of a sudden the lights are on or the air units are?
For those of you who may just be tuning in, we're waiting for our closed captioning system to come back online. It's a legal requirement that we provide it, and many people require it in order to be able to understand what we're saying. It's back up? All right, good. So we're back in business. We'll take as much testimony as we can between now and 4:30. For those of you who don't get called today, you can come back again if you'd like to testify in person to one of the later hearings. Alternatively, if it's easier, you can just submit testimony by email. You have until 5 p.m. on September 15th to do that. 2 minutes each, name for the record, after Chris gets his chance to testify. And in a minute, Carla will call the first names.
Mayor, if I could just, I want to give that tax ID number for the record.
Oh, good.
And this is in regards to the proposed zoning code amendment. It's R637100010. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thanks for your patience.
Thank you, Mayor, members of council. I'm Chris Smith, and I am vice chair of the Planning and Sustainability Commission. But I am required by city code to tell you that I'm also a registered lobbyist and authorized spokesperson for an organization that we're flying under the banner of No More Freeway Expansions. That's a group we formed in the last few weeks to highlight this issue for you, and I'm going to focus my remarks on that. You're going to hear the phrase this afternoon, I think, quite a few times, that urban freeway expansion has never solved congestion. And we believe that the I-5 Rose Quarter project in the Central City Plan. The largest single public investment in the 20 years contemplated in the Central City Plan is ill-advised. You have a packet in front of you that has 24 comp plan policies that I believe that this contradicts. I won't go through every single one of the 24, but I will highlight some of the major ones. The first, and appropriately the first, goal in the comp plan around transportation is safety. And this is the encapsulation of our Vision Zero policy, and it says that we need to have laser-like focus on traffic-related fatalities and serious injuries. This is the map from our Vision Zero work. And the thing, and at this scale, it's not really very useful. I'm sorry. But what I do want to highlight is that the freeway corridor is not a high crash corridor. One of the motivations touted for this project is safety. But in fact, the crashes that happen on the freeway are typically rear end and sideswipe collisions that result in property damage or minor injuries. Vision Zero demands that we focus on fatalities and serious injuries. We had 44 fatalities in the city last year in 2016, and sadly we're on track to have the same number roughly this year. This investment is not addressing those. Many of those fatalities happen on ODOT facilities elsewhere in the city, places like 82nd and Outer Powell, and we believe that ODOT should be spending their money in those places. Being environmentally sustainable and hitting carbon targets is another important part of our transportation policy. This contradicts those goals both for greenhouse gases and for air toxins. We believe that's a serious conflict.
You're a commissioner, so please go ahead.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Goal 9E asks us to focus on equity. I read in the Tribune this morning that the city's incremental revenue from the transportation bill will be about $30 million a year, and highlights that that's not sufficient to deal with our transportation investment gaps. The legislature has authorized $30 million a year for this project alone. So we have an investment equal to the rest of the money that Portland will see from the transportation bill focused on one area when we know that our most deficient areas are in East Portland. So I would argue that this does not meet the equity hurdle because it's investing money not where it's needed most. And I will skip ahead a bit in the interest of time. We have a very strong modal policy statement in the comprehensive plan that says we should be prioritizing walking, cycling, and transit. But in fact, this project puts a huge amount of dollars, $450 million, on the last priority in the system, which is single occupancy vehicles, which are the primary users of this stretch of freeway. The comp plan does address the question of congestion and basically focuses in on congestion pricing as the solution to that, not adding capacity. So while we appreciate Commissioner Saltzman's statement insisting on congestion pricing, we believe it's irresponsible to design a project until you know what effect congestion pricing has had. We believe that once pricing is implemented, you won't need a construction project. And a very important but very wonky issue is the mixed modal, the multimodal mixed use area, the so-called MMA. And that is something that the comp plan calls for. It's basically the idea that ODOT shouldn't be involved in land use planning in the central city. They have that purview because we want to make sure that land use planning doesn't disrupt state transportation facilities. There's sort of a deal here that ODOT said, well, if you do this project, we'll give you the MMA designation. I think that's a terrible deal for Portland. I think the MMA designation is supported, in fact, by this Central City Plan that does so much to meet the city's and the state's needs and has very good land use planning. That alone is justification for why we have earned the MMA status, and we shouldn't allow ourselves to be boxed into a deal where we trade something that contradicts our policies to get that. So I'm going to skip ahead here. I want to hit a couple of key ones. Commissioner Fish, I want to highlight for you the impervious surfaces policy. This project would represent almost 2 new lane miles plus shoulders of impervious surface. Somehow the stormwater from that's going to have to be captured and treated. I don't know if we can do it in bioswales on a freeway, but somebody has to figure that out. And I will close with climate because that is You know, in this week, when Houston's underwater and Oregon is burning, you know, I don't think any of us can deny that climate change is a critical priority, and our investments, all our investments, must move our climate goals. Making a $500 million investment that sends climate in the wrong direction is simply unsupportable in the current environment. So I will stop there, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions? Thanks, Chris, for your testimony. We appreciate
it.
Thank you.
Great. Carla?
Sorry. For the first people with four disabilities, our children, our people with small children, I have Heidi Moore and Susan Lindsay and Philip Wolfe.